everyone. Welcome back to The Growth Signal. I am so excited that you are ready to change the way you build relationships with your customers. As you know, we have incredible guests who come on the show, and today is no exception. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here, Alyssa. You and Amber have really built an interesting community.
Yeah, we are really, really blessed by the people who are engaging in our content. I actually just posted an invitation to do a roundtable series that I kind of had dreamed up overnight. And I said, hey, I have 9 spots for a roundtable. Who wants to come chat? And I was blown away. I filled up those spots in like 6 hours of people just raising their hand and wanting to join the conversation and be a part of what we're building over here. So it's incredible the kind of community you can build with people you've never actually met in person.
Well, and that's a lot about the connections, right? It's really about creating connections. And they don't all have to be today in person, although there is a lot to be said for those in-person 3D connections.
Yes, that real life moment. So tell us, Laura, I want to hear a little bit about your origin story. How did you get here? What forged you into the person that you are today?
Okay. First of all, in terms of customer centricity as a key part of my DNA, that's been a part of me forever. I mean, I talk about, you know, raking leaves and shoveling snow as a child and realizing that in order to create business value, that is get the money, right? I had to create customer value. So very early on, and I have lots of fun stories along the way of just those opportunities to learn that what Peter Drucker tells us all the time, that the purpose of business is to create a customer. So really we can say my origin began very young. But the company that I am at the helm of and have had the privilege of being at the helm of since 1999, Vision Edge Marketing, is a result of customers, of people saying, hey, could really use your help. Could you help us do X, Y, and Z? And usually that had something to do with building out a customer-centric strategy that was based on data and leveraging operational excellence, because those are key parts of my background. So I had never any intentions of being an entrepreneur, Alyssa. That was not ever in my plan. But here I am, 25 years later, after a long corporate career, still at the helm of this company and still really blessed with wonderful customers.
It's so funny you said you never really intended to be an entrepreneur. I had a similar experience. Joined a pre-revenue startup right out of college. Had no idea what I was doing. Had no business being an entrepreneur, honestly, because I was like just trying to figure it all out. But it really was the catalyst for the growth in my business. I had to learn how to do everything and how to learn and how to ask great questions and make great connections with people who are willing to help me. So, you know, you've been in this business for a very long time. A lot of businesses don't
We're not counting.
A lot of businesses don't make it that long. It's like the average business fails after, what, 5 years or something like that. So tell us, when you're thinking about how you engage with your own customers and you're trying to help them figure out how to grow and to grow their own businesses or their own personal skill sets, what is the first thing that you do? What's the one thing they have to do first?
Well, I always ask this question every single time someone says they want to be more customer centric. And the first question I ask them is, do you know what customer success is for your customer? What is success for your customer? Because a customer-centric company is going to at least understand that. Like, if you don't know what success is for them, then how can you serve them? Whether that, you know, yes, we do need to understand what their pain points are, what their aspirations are, their needs and wants, their preferences, their journey, all the things that people talk about. But if you can guess to the core understanding of what is success for your customer, and then how can you help them achieve that success? Where do you fit in enabling them to realize what is important to them? So if you can't have that conversation, then you probably need to step back and begin to rethink how you're building your business.
One of the, my original startup that I joined was a research company.
Oh.
And we were doing like customer experience research, user experience research. And when we were hiring researchers, one of the things that we looked for was a strong sense of empathy. And I don't mean empathy as like, I feel bad for all of the things that are happening around in the world, but the ability to take yourself out of your own experiences and see it from the other side of the table. Because when I talk to businesses about their customer centricity, sometimes they say, I want to be customer centric because they know that's the right answer. but they actually want to be customer centric in that they want customers to come to them and they want to be the center of their customers' universe, not create products and experiences. They want to be the center, not to be customer centric. So do you experience that where businesses aren't quite ready to separate what they want and what's good for them versus what the customer wants and what's good for the customer?
So I love the way that you have phrased that. That's a really good framing. And I would say that when I hear that, that is a sales-centric type of company, maybe a product-centric type of company, but that is an indication of a sales-centric company, right? So yes, in answer to your question, we have customers who have been sales-centric and recognize that that can only get you so far. And that in order to accelerate growth organically, right, and to get that additional organic growth, to get customers to become your advocates, to get customers who you can, where you can increase your share of wallet, where you can enhance the footprint inside a customer. Because we work inside B2B companies specifically, is a very big, you know, the majority of our business. You have to begin to think about how do we run our company with the idea of serving our customers. Because when you begin to think about putting customers at the center of your organization, you're really talking about how you run your company, right? And the processes and the data and the measures that you're going to use, the strategies you're going to employ, and all of that. So it ripples out very quickly. Does that make sense?
I love that. And I like that you called out, you know, that you can be really three types of a company, right? There's really three options. And you might correct me, there might be more. But you can either be customer-centric, operational/sales-centric, or product-centric, right? And maybe there's a hybrid of those different three things. But it's interesting to see the companies that are product-centric. And it's okay to be any one of those things. I think the issue comes in when you have that, like, cognitive dissonance of you say you're customer centric, but you're really like operation centric, or you say you're customer centric, but you really just care about the product that you're building and not necessarily the customer per se. Do you have companies that, you know, want to be customer centric, but just aren't quite there?
Oh, sure. We have, you know, and that's very common. And so when you think about the kinds of customers we serve, they typically have a complex product or service. It usually is a consultative sell in that there are multiple people inside their company that is going to be part of the buying journey. They usually have longer sales cycles. It's not like because their investment is considerable and it's going to have implications to their business. So it's not like going through the grocery line checkout and deciding I'm going to have this chocolate bar. And if I don't like it, right? It's kind of not those decisions. So those companies, they are product-centric. Their products have to be exceptional, right? But ultimately, to get that, to accelerate the growth, you can do well in the beginning, but to accelerate the growth, you have to make that shift because of today's environment. Today's environment, the customer is in the driver's seat. We call it, you know, I think it's Forrester that might call it the age of the customer. I've heard the engagement economy. We've used all those languages, all those different terms to describe the environment we're in. But essentially what it means is the customer is in the lead, right? So you have to meet the customer where they are and the processes where they are. And that changes the way you think about how you are going to go to market, right? Because they are going to be in charge of how the journey plays out.
Yeah, I actually just had a debate, I guess, with someone who comes from more of a legacy company, right? They weren't born in the cloud. They've been moving to the cloud. And we had a conversation about, you know, today's consumers, whether they're buying a business to business products or whether they're buying a business to consumer, are less loyal than ever before because they don't have to be. When you buy a bunch of hardware, you're kind of stuck with it for a while. But if I just buy a year-long subscription to a software and you're not doing it for me, it's pretty easy for me to switch from Zoom to Microsoft Teams with a push of a button.
This is true in some instances, and that might be an example. But let's think about maybe a more complicated one, which might be if you're a business and your financial software platform. So maybe you've been running, I'll use brand names just to make it for the sake of ease.
Yeah, we'll just keep it easy. Been using... Not sponsored. They have nothing to do with this podcast. Okay,
yes,
disclaimer done.
Thank you, Alyssa. So let's say that you're a company that has been running on QuickBooks, but you and you're being asked to go from maybe a desktop version to a cloud version. And now that offers up the opportunity for you to rethink where you want to go. But moving everything from QuickBooks to, let's say, NetSuite is not necessarily the push of a button. It's mm-hmm. not like just going from Zoom to Teams, right? Or from Google Meetup to Zoom. It is a little bit more complex than that. So our customers, there is complexity and making shifts in the kind of technologies you might use or products you might use or even services you might use could be relatively difficult. And so there is a stickiness to their products, which is why they are often enamored by their products. But the world is very competitive. All of us face very stiff competition. And so one of the ways that we can differentiate if you're customer-centric is on the customer experience that you bring to the table. Because sometimes it's not the features, you know, the speed, all of those things, even the price. It might just be the relationship and the experience that you're having and that you or want to be having, right? That will make a difference on whether or not you're going to stay or go.
Yeah, and I think consciously deciding to design those experiences around your customer and to keep them, right? So like to your point about it's not as easy as just switching from QuickBooks to NetSuite, but what if NetSuite says, hey, we've got a service that'll do all of that for you. We'll switch it all for you and starts to create those intriguing opportunities. And I've heard that actually from a bank who had a service where it was like, if you switch to us, we'll do all that switching for you. You don't even have to think about it, right? Now, whether that's reality, I don't know. But it's interesting to see that conversation happen and that story happen around how do we make sure that the customer is not even tempted to move on because they're having such a great experience. Do you have any advice for listeners on how you can start to create that post-sale growth opportunity?
I think that's an excellent question. And I do have some advice because we have a tendency in business to just think about the acquisition phase of the experience. But we really need to be thinking more about the relationship phase of the experience. From the moment we onboard that customer, how we invoice that customer, how we do email with that customer, everything, every touch point. So I always recommend to our customers, what are all the touch points that your customer experiences with your company? Alyssa, do you ever remember, there's a very old book, this may be before your time, and I know that you love to read, and I know that we both read, because I listened to one of the previous episodes, Gary Keller's book, The One Thing, great.
Oh, yeah,
book.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Love that book. So I'll throw out another book, probably you read, because you're such an avid reader, and it's called Moments of Truth, and it was written by the CEO of Scandinavian Airlines way back. It's called Moments of Truth. And what he's essentially talking about is every interaction you have with a customer is a moment of truth, right? About whether or not you're customer centric. So I always recommend, what are all those interactions that happen once they sign on the dotted line? Not just the things that happen beforehand, like your pricing, like your contracts, like legal, right? Or setting up an account or onboarding, but everything that happens afterward. What are all those interactions and how well do you deliver on the promise of the customer experience that, you know, you're offering? What is that? And where can you improve those moments of truth, right? Because that's what gets people snagged up. I just had that happen today. You want to hear the story?
Yeah, heck yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with Hulu?
Yes.
Okay. Did you know that Hulu is now part of Disney?
I did know that because I got the bundle from Verizon. I got the Hulu and Disney and ESPN bundle. So yes,
okay.
I'm aware.
Okay. So I heard from my family this morning, oh, it's not working. We can't log in, right? That doesn't happen very often. It usually works pretty seamlessly. But I went to go put the login and it wouldn't work. So then it was, well, why isn't it working? So then we went online to try to figure out how to log in. But... And we could log in. But we still couldn't make it work on the TV, which, as you can know, for some family members, that could be a crisis. So I ended up saying, okay, how do we get help? You go through the help thing. Help is really hard to find. There's no information. Finally get on the chat thing to chat with a person. We're like number 60 in line, right?
So it's got to be like a system situation, right?
Yes.
Because there's not many people.
Right. Well, you know what it turned out to be? Hulu was down. Now, they have everyone's email. Why didn't they send a message out? Hey, we're having a little problem. Service is down. Hang tight. Right? Instead, we waited 30 minutes to talk to somebody, went through 20 minutes of going through verification of the account, right? Because you have to authorize who you are, before the person could tell us that Hulu was down. So that is an example of a touch point, right? Everything was hard. Finding the chat was hard. Everything was made hard in that process. And as a customer who's paying over $1,000 a year, which is a lot of money for a family, you would think it would be an easier, less effort type of engagement post in an experience as an existing customer, right? So that is just one example. Now, of course, that's a B2C example, but that works inside every company. Every single company has those kinds of interactions.
And I think it's so funny that you say that, because it immediately reminds me of my local public school will send out an email and a text message if their phone system is down for a few hours. And I get a notification, hey, our phone system's down. We're working on restoring it, but you can reach us through email, through the portal, through all these different ways. So if my local community school district of maybe 1,000 kids total can figure it out, I think Hulu could have figured out how to send out some kind of notice that it was down.
Yeah, you would think, right? So that's an example of understanding what is a touch point and what is an instance that could happen that could create a scenario, and where is that opportunity in that scenario for us to demonstrate a stellar customer experience? So they lost an opportunity, right, to create a stellar customer experience. Instead, they ended up creating a frustrating customer experience. And that's every company needs to be thinking about that. So to your point, that's an example, but it happens with invoices, right? That's another example. It happens with so many points of interaction. And you're only as good as the last interaction, the last moment of truth.
100%. You're only as good as your last call, your last conversation, your last touch point. I have an experience I would love to get your feedback on. I am curious to see how all of this agentic AI kind of stuff will start to happen. Because to your point on touch points, a lot of companies are throwing up these AI agents to interface with customers. And I think they're forgetting that these AI agents are now your like new brand ambassadors. They're the new people that people talk to for the first time sometimes. I don't know about you, but I have been on websites where I'm trying to chat with a chatbot. I know it's an escalation situation. I have to talk to a real person. And if I just keep typing human, maybe they'll let me through. And it's just such a frustrating experience. Have you seen companies as they're implementing AI and adding this unhuman layer to human interaction change their perspective on growth?
So I, like everyone, am enamored with what's going on in the AI, generative AI space. I've been associated with AI and machine learning a very long time. Being my roots in data, AI and machine learning are not a new thing. It's been around for a very long time. But what has occurred over the last couple of years is really what's pretty exciting to everyone. I mean, I was probably one of the first people who had an account with ChatGPT. It was first released into the public domain. I think all of that is awesome. But like any technology, whatever it is in your tech stack, and any technology that's going to become customer facing, you want to be quite careful about what kind of experience you're creating. So there's going to be some customers, and you've probably seen this. There are going to be some customers who don't want a chatbot. So they offer you an option. Do you want the chatbot? Do you want to go to the community? Do you want to talk to a real person? These multiple channels, which is, will create extra burden on a company to keep all those channels. But not all people want to have the same desire for the same channel. So it's very important to know your customer. This is back to having good information and good insights into your customer. Is the majority of your, so let's imagine that you are a bank and may are or and maybe you work in a lot of commercial accounts. Maybe those commercial accounts are ran by more established legacy companies, depending on what your bank is. The likelihood of them using a chatbot might be less likely than their likelihood to at least do an online chat. Maybe they're willing to do an online chat. Or more than likely, they're going to want to pick up the phone or they're going to want to use email. So yeah. There's going to have to be different channels. You need to really know your customers and be yeah. and let them parse themselves. You may not be able to parse everyone. So give them the options to parse themselves, right?
I think everything you said there is definitely spot on, especially the part about like you have to know your customers, but you have to give them agency to make their own choices and decisions. Because I work with a lot of people who want to segment the hell out of their customer base, right? They've got all of these segmentations and personas, which is good, right? They're trying to send messages that are timely and relevant. Sometimes, though, you can do all of the best research and segmentation and understanding of your customer and still miss the mark. So I love the idea of allowing people to parse themselves and choose their own adventure, if you will, rather than just assuming that you know everything, even when your intentions are good.
Yeah, we can't know everything. And we don't know. For example, a situation may be where they can, a chatbot doesn't work because they're in what in their mind is an emergency. There's an urgency, yes. right? That might change how they might normally want to interact. Or maybe a location where they're at might change how they want to interact. So it's really important to recognize that human beings are in a variety of situations and we are moving around in the world, unlike maybe a machine. And so we have to be able to engage with our customers based on, again, where they are. And I think that's really the most important message is really understanding, you know, where your customer is, where they are in their journey, where they are in their experiences. Did they come to you after they've already tried to do something three times and spent a lot of money and been very unsuccessful? They're going to come with a very different perspective than someone who's maybe totally never done anything like this before versus somebody who has done something and recognized that they need help. It's all going to be different. So understanding where they're coming from will make a difference on how the experience is going to be perceived by them. And it's really about their perception, right? The experience is about their perception.
Yeah, I was reading an article a couple of days ago, and the question was like, hey, my customer isn't responding. I'm reaching out with valuable worksheets or training or whatever. And they kept saying these are valuable things. And I read that and my initial reaction was, we don't get to define value. Our customer defines the value. If they're not responding to you, either they don't see the value in what you're offering, and so you need to change what you're offering or change how you're positioning it, or you know what? Maybe leave them alone. Maybe they're good. They don't need to always hear from you in order to find value in the experience that you're providing.
So I think that's a really, really important point that you just made. Value. Value, right? So what determines value is the person who decides if it's valuable to them.
Right.
So we come to the table thinking that we offer all kinds of value. Right, that what we've created is a value, that we are a value. But that's only true if they think so, if they feel so, right? So
right.
Again, one of the things I say to customers, do you know what your customers value? Do you know what they value from you? Do they know why they value what you bring to the table compared to other people? Do you know the answer to those questions? And a lot of times they don't know the answer to those questions. So how do you get the answers to those questions? Well, in the B2B world, you can create a customer advisory board. That's something we help our customers do. It's a great vehicle to be able to engage with real customers in a timely way. If that doesn't work for you, there are other methods, whether that's you setting up, you know, QBRs with your customers, for example, quarterly business reviews with some of your customers so that you can have regular interactions or roundtables for your customers or doing real customer research. There's all different ways, right? But the point is, you need to know. And that means you need to ask, not assume.
Exactly. That's what the point I was going to make is you're like, okay, customer advisory boards, research councils, all kinds of things. They all have one common thread. Just ask the question. I was on a call with a colleague a couple of days ago, and she said something that just really made me sit up straight. I was like, that was a great question. She said, how do you like to work? Do you like to have a monthly communication of what we've been up to and how things are going? Do you want to get on calls? What is your cadence? How do you want to receive it? What kind of channel? And it just made me sit there and go, that's a great question. I never thought to ask that, because she was creating her delivery experience around how the customer wanted to work, not around how she wanted to work. And I thought that was really brilliant.
That is brilliant. Another really good question we like to ask people, because when people are trying to figure out how they can address customer experience and they're thinking about all kinds of ideas, but a really important question is also, what's one thing you hope we never change?
Oh, I love that. Because right. That's such good framing, because it's instead of being like, what could we do better, which is a negative framing, you're saying, what should we do forever, which is a positive framing. I think that's really smart.
Yeah, but really understanding. That tells you something that's of value to them. What's one thing we should never change? That gets you an answer to, or begins to help you peel the onion around what is of value that you're bringing to the table, right?
That is so good. I'm going to steal that one for sure.
Okay, you can.
I love it. Awesome, Laura. So thinking about all of the incredible people that you have had a chance to meet, to work with, or that you aspire to know, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we build relationships with our customers?
Oh my gosh, there are so many people that have made a difference in my life, including customers. Like this last book, Fast Track Your Business, is a result of a customer saying, when are you ever going to put that framework in a book? So customers have made a difference. Mentors along the way. I worked for several people that were remarkable mentors to me. But if I had a chance to sit down over coffee and talk to somebody about customer centricity, and he would take my call and have lunch with me, I would want to talk to Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft. I think he's done some amazing things around. I love his growth mindset, which I think is really critical to a company's, you know, culture. I love the fact that he does want to create a customer-centric culture. So if he's listening to this podcast,
we'll put that out into the universe. We'll put that out into the universe. We'll send it to him and say, hey, this person wants to meet you. You guys should connect. Awesome.
But I think he's doing some remarkable things at Microsoft. Yeah. What do you think about what?
I think that there has been a marked shift in Microsoft strategy that has been visible both to their investors, to their employees, and to their customer base. Like when I think of Microsoft, I would think of old, stuffy, behind the times, kind of crappy products, but what else is there? And you've really seen them shift over time. The fact that they were one of the first to implement an integrated AI copilot, and that their products have gone from something I would buy at the computer store on a CD-ROM to being able to start up my new computer and purchase them quickly and easily. And I think that they're a huge legacy organization. So obviously it's harder for them to move than some of the more nimble startups, but you can see under his leadership, they're trending that direction.
I agree. And I got to meet one of the women that was behind the co-pilot. She is amazing.
That's awesome.
She's here in Austin.
That's what we love to hear. So Laura, if someone is connecting with you, if they want help becoming more customer centric, if they're looking for some support in growth and accountability, where can they find you online?
Well, they should come to visionedgemarketing.com, because our slews of free things, I'm not going to say valuable, but free things that might be helpful, along with just hundreds of articles on customer centricity. We have a lot of customers of all sizes. So those smaller customers who need to be able to do it yourself, we have a lot of do-it-yourself resources that they might find helpful. And they can always email me at laurap@visionedgemarketing.com. Happy to have a conversation or reach out on LinkedIn. I'm really glad to have had the opportunity to be with you, Alyssa. This has been a fun conversation.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was great.
Thank you.